Talk about what you did after you qualified.
I started off as a houseman, again, a huge privilege, on the Nuffield Department of Medicine. So this was the top medical house job, essentially, in Oxford. And I worked with a guy called Tony Windebank, who later became a very important consultant in the Mayo Clinic, and George Hart, who became a cardiology professor, again was well known. The Nuffield Department of Medicine was then run by Professor David Wetherall, who'd just arrived from Liverpool, and the reader in medicine at the time was a man called Robert Turner. Working with David Wetherall was a huge privilege, and he was a very, very good clinician, as well as being an exceptionally good scientist. I would come on quite early onto the wards, and periodically I'd find David Wetherall would have been on the wards ahead of me, worrying about one or two of the patients that he wasn't quite sure about. And he was a very good diagnostic clinician, but he wouldn't waste time on the ward. So if everything was running smoothly, he would go round and say, thanks very much, I just seem to have rubber stamped everything, that's the way it should be, and he'd disappear again. So very, very efficient use of time. Never would muck around spending time on things which were straightforward. Would spend a lot of his powerful mental energies on things which were problematic. Tremendous clinician to work for. The very first patient, actually, who I think I presented to David Wetherall, I gave a brief little synopsis, and then this patient piped up and pointed to me and said, doesn't he look pale? And David Wetherall said, don't worry about that, he always looks like that. But it was one of those sort of absurd occasions that I remember, of just having the whole of my careful professionalism sort of undermined by a patient who just sort of pointed to me and said, you know, that I look pale, has nothing to do with him. Robert Turner was the other clinician who was around at the time, who I remember, a very, very good clinician and enthusiast, someone who was very, very much not pompous, was very much someone who came in, did the work and got out again. I very much like Robert Turner, and more of him later. After doing the house jobs on the Nuff Department of Medicine, I moved off to Swindon to do my surgical house jobs. I would say that with the house jobs, they were very hard work in terms of long hours. We would sometimes be on for a weekend. If you were on for a weekend, I would come on the Nuff Department of Medicine, for instance, on Friday morning, and I would get off on Monday evening because I'd been on over the weekend. And now, of course, you could get some sleep during that time, but you were on continuously all that time for the patients under your care. And I think we've lost a huge amount by not doing that. The reality is I wasn't up all weekend. Indeed, during the weekend, you'd get things under control during the mornings. You were looking after patients over the weekend, and they were medical patients, so you should be able to cope reasonably well with a sensible number of patients. You were coping with four wards of patients, perhaps, or sometimes just two, which would be two times 30, maybe 60 patients or something, of whom most of would be stable. And you could easily manage that as a houseman, especially since you'd got senior housemen and registrars on the end of a phone. You were responsible for those people, and you got to know them. The reality is that you went around and saw them every single day. They knew who you were. You knew who they were. If they complained of a pain in the middle of the night, you knew the sort of person that they were and whether this was likely to mean you needed to get out of bed or not. And my view about it is that that way of learning medicine is just a very good way of doing it. You have to know patients and you have to follow them through. Today's way of just saying you must be on for 8 hours and then you've got to have so much rest and all the rest of it is a ridiculous way of doing medicine. It breaks up people's lives in a crazy way. It means that every weekend you're on for a little bit, and so you never have a weekend off. But secondly, you never get to grips with who these patients are. You never get to see the results of what it is that you do. With an eight-hour shift, all you do is you make sure that no one dies and that you've just about sort of done the stuff and got some fluids up, and then you rush off again and the next person does exactly the same. So the patients are completely bewildered by a whole stream of different doctors, none of whom properly know their case. And this is crazy. The European Working Time Directive just should be ignored for purposes of medicine. And it's something that I haven't spoken about loudly enough, but I have very, very strong views that this is very bad medicine. Both socially, because it never gives people weekends off, and it's very bad for training. That aside, I went off down to Swindon, did my house jobs in Swindon, worked with Mr. Huddy down there, an exceptionally good surgeon, and I learnt a lot from him and how you should run a surgical firm. I saw some crazy things going on down there as well, and I was also down there with Tony Winderbank doing house surgery. Oh, that was the time, incidentally, that there was a strike. It was the only time that there was a strike of doctors. And Tony Winderbank and I were both people who felt that we certainly were not prepared to strike and certainly wouldn't strike, and that it was quite against our culture to do so. And I do remember very strongly that we were... It didn't make any difference, of course, to the totality of anything, the fact that we carried on, but we were subjected to really outstanding amount of abuse, and so I'm very sympathetic with the sort of poor people who get labelled as scabs, as indeed we did, by people who seem to suddenly turn into fanatics about this and not recognise that people might have moral revulsions about taking industrial action as a doctor.
What year was this strike?
So this must have been 75, 76, sometime about then. I qualified in 75, but actually just before I qualified, I'd gone out to India with Claire and with my elder brother, who I've mentioned before was an electrical engineer. We worked for 3 months in Serenga, which was a Methodist missionary hospital about 100 miles west of Calcutta. Very interesting and exciting time. My elder brother, while he was out there, mended their telephone system, which had been installed but never worked. And the first thing that he pointed out as a reason that it didn't work is that there was no wire connecting any of the phones together. That was a fairly straightforward start to his diagnosis as to why the phone system didn't work. It was that there were no wires. I came after my house surgery jobs. I did some infectious diseases, and then I did a year of neurology working with Peter Matthews, who was the professor then, no relation of mine at all, and John Spaulding, who I'd taken off as in Tingwick. John Spaulding, who I much admired as a neurologist, a wonderfully quiet spoken man with a huge moral conscience and an amazing diagnostic clinician. Absolute privilege to work with him, and indeed with Peter Matthews. Peter Matthews was a very good academic, wrote some very interesting and brilliant things in neurology, and had a very dry sense of humour. And we had some tremendous times doing neurology. I moved from there off to Central Middlesex as registrar, and Central Middlesex Hospital was then running in very much the traditional way, where the registrars and senior registrars ran the hospital, in the way that I've described as at Chigwell, the prefects used to run the school, and the teachers just had to get on teaching. At Central Middlesex, the consultants would just come in and consult on the rounds, and then rather disappear. And again, the camaraderie at Central Middlesex between the registrars and senior registrars and how the whole system worked was brilliant. So that if you ever came into Central Middlesex as a patient, you were getting, in my view, some of the best treatment that there was available in the world in terms of depth of consultation and so on, because all of the medical staff, the registrars and senior registrars and senior house officers would meet for lunch every day, and we would exchange stories about who was on the ward and who we needed other people to see. So that if you've got someone with bellyache, you'd talk to your surgical colleagues over lunch and say, can you just pop round and have a look at Mrs. Jones? And then the surgeons would say, you know, oh, Mrs. Smith seems a bit short of breath and we're not sure whether she's got asthma. I mean, on one of those occasions, I remember someone describing to me over lunch saying someone has got asthma and would we pop round? And we said, well, what does it look like? And so on. And we thought, well, I don't know, that's not asthma, that's something different. And we went round and found someone in acute renal failure on the surgical ward. Now, that's not the surgeon's fault that someone's in acute renal failure, but the reality is at Central Middlesex, people always used to gossip about what was going on with their patients. And so people would be shifted not by some consultants between the cardiac care unit and the intensive, the ITU, the intensive therapy unit. They would be shifted around by the middle staff, and they would make sure that there were spaces on ITU and so on. Indeed, we managed it so well that some of the consultants who were slightly dangerous would find that they had very few patients under their care at any one stage, because they'd always be triaged off to cardiac care unit or to ITU, or shifted off because they belonged to someone else or they'd got some other more important thing. So that even the consultants found that some of them had a quite high workload because they were competent, and some of the incompetent consultants would find that on their ward round they'd only got three or four trivial patients to look at and very few decisions that they could make. So Central Middlesex was a good way of learning things. I did quite a lot of teaching for membership at that stage, and enjoyed teaching, and did a lot of clinical teaching. While I was at Central Middlesex, I had a series of letters from Robert Turner, who I mentioned before. Now, Robert Turner, I had bumped into when I was walking down the corridor a couple of years after I'd finished working with him, and he bumped into me in the corridor of the infirmary and said, what are you doing now? And I said, I'm looking around for a registrar job, which I eventually got at Central Middlesex. But he said, well, what do you think about research? And I said, well, I've done my research, you know, I've got a defil in psychophysics. But then I suddenly realized that actually I hadn't got a job, and that he wasn't asking me in general terms what I thought about research. He was asking me, I know, whether I wanted to work with him for a few months before I went off to Central Middlesex. And so, in fact, I had done that, and I brought my view about non-steady state mathematics with, as I mentioned, about frequency modulation and amplitude modulation to look at the endocrine system. And we started to look at some data then about the non-steady state nature of insulin and glucose feedback, and started to apply Fourier transforms and autocorrelation and a whole load of those mathematical tools to the data, which started to fall out in a series of fairly straightforward and interesting papers. And Robert was then so taken with what we could do with all of this that he wrote me a series of letters saying, please come back to work with me in Oxford. So that instead of then moving from Central Middlesex registrar job to a neurology registrar stroke senior registrar job, I got sucked back to Robert Turner's laboratory in Oxford and started, or rather continued then, my diabetes research, which I've been in ever since. So it was one of those chance meetings in a corridor that just moved me from being, as it were, a budding neurologist to a diabetologist.